Welcome back to another episode of the Jacob Johnston Show. There's no special announcements or programming notes up front, so let's go ahead and dive on in. So in a surprising twist here, Democrat Senator Kristen Gillibrand, Democrat New York, authored legislation Wednesday that would prohibit foreign nationals from donating to local referenda and ballot initiatives just months after federal regulators said the practice was permissible. The Stop Foreign Interference and Ballot Measure Act, as reported by Axios, would amend the prohibition on foreign national donations to U.S. political campaigns to include state and local ballot initiatives. Gillibrand's bill would close what good government advocates call a glaring loophole in federal election laws, allowing foreign nationals to bankroll efforts to reshape state and local laws, the outlet added. Now, I must say, I am completely surprised by this move coming from a Democrat, considering how much they rely on foreign nationals to bankroll their ballot initiatives and state and local elections, George Soros being one of their biggest donors at the state and local level. And George Soros is a foreign national with absolutely no connections to the United States whatsoever. And think about this, how long it's taken for something like this to come about, where foreign nationals have been interfering at the local level. In fact, they go through and they use their ability to interfere at the local level in order to funnel campaign contributions to the federal level. And all the foreign nationals who interfere in our elections always interfere on the side of promoting Democrats. So to see a Democrat come in here and say, hey, we need to stop foreign nationals from helping Democrats get elected, is really quite surprising. I mean, we'll see George Soros get involved in elections for county sheriff, for city council, for state senate and governorship, to get involved in trying to pass left-wing ballot initiatives. Maybe things like votes on allowing illegal immigrants to vote in local elections. So I am quite surprised here that a Democrat is introducing legislation that would cut off major funding for the Democrat Party by blocking these foreign nationals. And then, of course, as these foreign nationals interfere, such as George Soros, in local elections and ballot initiatives, part of that is donating to groups in order to get more money into the election. So he doesn't just go off and donate directly to the campaigns, but also to political action committees at the local level. And then those political action committees, of course, take the money that they get from these foreign nationals, now that it's been funneled through a U.S.-based political action committee, funneling it up to federal Senate, the House of Representatives, and even for the race of president. Now, I get it that the Democrats get a lot of money from mega corporations and the millionaire and billionaire class, as the Democrats are the party of the 1%, and then they use the media controlled by the 1% to try and convince all of the people down at the bottom of the income levels that voting for things that benefit the 1% hurt the 1%. So yes, I am completely surprised by this. Now, I don't know if Kristen Gillibrand is delusional about how the Democrats get bankrolled, or if she thinks that it's somehow the Republicans that are being bankrolled by foreign nationals, and she thinks, yes, we're cutting that off. But I have very little hope that this legislation will actually get passed. Because even if Kristen Gillibrand is completely ignorant, because she is from New York, and New York is so left-wing that they don't need money flowing in from foreign nationals for a Democrat to get elected, you could put a D on a glass of water and the Democrats would get elected. So I don't think she realizes just how much her party relies nationally on foreign money in order to bankroll their campaigns to get elected. So while I will applaud her for cutting off the ability of foreign nationals to help fund Democrats' election campaigns and ballot initiatives, seeing how so many other Democrats, being from swing states or somehow managing to get elected in a red state, seeing how many of them are dependent upon foreign money flowing into the election, I have very little doubt that this legislation will get passed. But if it doesn't get passed, what's going to happen? The Republicans can go out there and start asking, well, why? Why is it that the Democrats will not cut off foreign nationals from being able to spend money in our elections? Because if all the foreign nationals were spending money on Republicans, the Democrats would immediately vote to cut that off. So obviously their refusal to cut off foreign money in our election is because they know how much they are dependent. I mean, the campaign ads can go off and really write themselves. So Democrats are starting to get mad at a lot of their own people, whether it's Joe Manchin and Sinema, who is holding up the Build Back Broke legislation. I know the Democrats want to call it Build Back Better, but it would completely bankrupt the United States and really push forward the Democrats' goal of completely collapsing the U.S. But now you got Gillibrand out there introducing legislation to cut off Democrats from a major source of funding, which is from foreign nationals. So we'll see whether or not this actually gets through and gets passed. I have very little hope that it would, but if it manages to get passed, I will be cheering. I will actually celebrate Kristen Gillibrand for introducing this legislation, as it will vastly cripple the Democrat Party. Now, in the category of dumpster fires, which has defined the Biden administration, it has been revealed that the Biden administration abandoned 14,000 Americans in Afghanistan. So you know about the disastrous withdrawal from Afghanistan that the Biden administration engaged in, and how they had abandoned American citizens to become hostages of the Taliban? You know, just completely abandons Americans. Well, the Biden administration for a long time has been trying to downplay it, trying to say that they are working with the Taliban to get Americans and green card holders out of Afghanistan, that there's just a few people, you know, maybe a couple hundred people that were abandoned in Afghanistan. Now, a few hundred people is bad enough. But as we had found out as a result of a hearing, the State Department believes as many as 14,000 U.S. legal permanent residents remain in Afghanistan. Foreign policy has learned, as the agency faces increasing scrutiny from Congress about the status of U.S. citizens and green card holders that are still stranded in the Taliban-controlled country. The findings, disclosed by congressional aides familiar with the matter, has been transmitted by the State Department to aides on Capitol Hill in private. But officials revealed the figure when questioned by Republican lawmakers on Wednesday, insisting the agency doesn't track the figure. So they're still trying to downplay that, hey, okay, yes, we believe there is as many as 14,000 citizens that were abandoned and left behind by Joe Biden in Afghanistan, but we don't know the official number. I mean, we don't keep track. It goes on. Isn't the operating assumption, the question being, isn't the operating assumption about 14,000? Republican Representative Chris Smith asked Brian McKeon, Deputy Secretary of State for Management and Resources, at a hearing on Wednesday, referring to the figures briefed in private. The response, we don't track legal permanent residents. It's a good question why we don't, he added, suggesting the lack of clarity might be because the State Department does not require Americans and legal permanent residents traveling abroad to report their whereabouts. So now they're going off and they're going, okay, the assumption that it was only just a couple hundred people, yeah, we believe it could be as high as 14,000 people, but don't quote us on that. You can't use that as an official number because, well, we don't require people to check in while they're traveling abroad, so we really don't know. So think about this. The Biden administration, with absolutely zero concern for the lives of the American people, and that has been demonstrated repeatedly, whether it's through the crisis at the border, the damage that he's doing to the economy, the complete disregard for the Constitution. Well, if that wasn't enough, abandoning deliberately 14,000 Americans in Afghanistan, after giving the Afghanistan a country, after giving them billions of dollars in military equipment, also provided them with nearly 14,000 hostages. I'm speechless. I am speechless. And the first order of business, once the Republicans take office or take back the House and the Senate in 2022, You know, come January 2023, the first order of business shouldn't be impeaching the entire Biden administration, impeaching Biden, impeaching Harris, impeaching that disgraceful Merrick Garland posing as the attorney general. You know, they all need to be completely impeached and removed. Now, I know that would leave Nancy Pelosi, okay, but it wouldn't take long for her to engage in impeachable offenses herself because she is a left-wing lunatic. If the complete nature of the election of Biden getting unconstitutionally installed into the White House wasn't enough to motivate impeachment, his actions since being installed have more than warranted impeachment. Just abandoning Americans to terrorists, to become hostages of terrorists, should be enough for impeachment. And as bad as everything is, just from that, it continues to get worse. So as you know, whenever the Democrats are in charge, it's just corruption all over the place, whether that's at the local level, state level, or when Democrats are in charge of the federal government. It's just nothing but corruption and endless assaults on our democracy and our constitutional rights. And the next few stories really highlight that, starting off with Durham's indictment of Steele dossier source, which directly implicates Hillary Clinton. Now, I'm not going to read the whole article here, but what it comes down to is that the FBI knew that they were being lied to. They knew the dossier that they had been using as justification to spy on the Trump campaign was a sham, a lie, that it was Russian propaganda, but they didn't care. Now, maybe they didn't know right away, but upon finding out and then taking a look at everything that they did, acting upon what they had found out was complete debunked bull crap, instead of, you know, coming clean, going, yes, we got this information, we investigated it, but we have determined it to be false. No, they didn't do that. Instead, they covered up the fact that they knew it was false. James Comey knew that it was a complete lie and probably knew that it was coming out of the Democrats and that the main source of this was a Russian disinformation specialist. But they decided, oh, we dislike Trump. So they continued on. And then they went into cover-up mode after Trump got elected. Think about this. They knew that it was false, and yet they went all the way to a special counsel probe with the Mueller investigation, knowing that the entire basis for the Mueller investigation was complete bullcrap. But the point of the Mueller investigation was nothing more than to cover up for the crimes and illegal behavior of James Comey and the FBI as he was running it. Now, the question starts to become, what about Christopher Wray? Why didn't he do anything? Well, because he was more concerned about protecting the image and the public view of the FBI rather than weeding out the corruption and those who engaged in illegal behavior that undermined the credibility and faith in the FBI. I mean, as long as the FBI is full of a bunch of corrupt bureaucrats, you know, corrupt leadership, there's not going to be any faith in the FBI. So they knew it was a lie. They continued to use it as a predicate to spy on a political campaign and a presidency, even though they knew it was a lie. And then they spent tens of millions of dollars of taxpayer money on a special counsel probe to cover up what they had done. The Justice Department, just like all other aspects of the government, become completely corrupt when a Democrat is in charge. But if you think it's just at the federal level, you'd be wrong. As you go through and you take a look at what's happening in the trial of Kyle Rittenhouse, you realize that it's not just the FBI and the tops of the federal government that are massively corrupt wherever Democrats are in charge. It's also at the state and local levels. To demonstrate that, here's a headline for you. Coming out of PJ Media, Rittenhouse defense, Kenosha DA colluded with detective to hide cell phone evidence. And the article reads, testimony on Wednesday and Thursday from the Kenosha detective in charge of the investigation into shootings by Kyle Rittenhouse left more than a few questions unanswered about what evidence is missing from the trial. The defense wants, I don't know how to pronounce that name, I don't know how to pronounce it, I'm sorry, but wants the video from his cell phone from the night of the shooting. But prosecutors working with the chief investigator, Detective Martin Howard, scuttled the video in apparent contravention to typical police homicide protocols. As PJ Media has previously reported, the Rittenhouse defense team has already brought up questions about the disappearance of a high-definition video taken by the FBI surveillance aircraft the night of the riot and shootings, and then somehow lost it before it's made its way to the defense. During cross-examination, Rittenhouse attorney asked the detective about how cell phone evidence was typically handled. The use of force expert attorney Andrew Abranca wrote over at Legal Insurrection that Detective Howard violated a number of the department's normal investigative practices with respect to this case. While the defense suggests being in unusually close and improper communication with the ADA, Binger himself. I could go on here and read this, but let me get to the point. Kyle Rittenhouse, you know, unless you're living under the rock, you know about what happened in Kenosha, how the left was rioting, and he was there because he works in Kenosha. You know, even though he commutes to work, he works there. You know, and he was providing medic. I mean, he was providing help to injured rioters and people injured by the rioters, you know, pretty much remaining neutral. But he was also armed at the time in order to be able to protect a private business from being destroyed by rioters. Well, the left doesn't like this. They don't like that he was providing aid to people injured by the rioters. And they ignore the fact that he was providing aid, you know, medical aid to those rioters who were injured. They don't care about that part. And the fact that he would dare be there to help protect private property from the left's desire to destroy it. Anyways, he ended up having to defend himself as he ended up being attacked by a mob. A mob, by the way, that themselves, at least some of them, were armed and had already fired rounds. They had kicked him to the ground, hit him over the head with a skateboard, and so much more. I mean, this is a clear cut and dry self-defense case, no ifs, ands, or buts about it. And what do we see here? Well, we see the FBI had surveillance video from a surveillance aircraft, and the left has their narrative that he went there and that he was, you know, racist and hunting down black people. That's the left's narrative. And so the FBI gets in there, and what do they do from their surveillance aircraft? They delete the high-definition video of the events that took place. I mean, here is a murder case, and they have high definition video of what happened, which if they kept, you could watch it and go, yeah, there's no case here. There's nothing to prosecute Rittenhouse with. But what happens? They destroy it. And then they have a standard definition, but you know, it's blurry, it's far away, it's hard to make out what happened. So you have the FBI destroying evidence that would exonerate Kyle Rittenhouse before it even got to trial. You know, charges would just be dismissed. But now you also have a situation here where more at the local level, the police investigators had gathered evidence, you know, video evidence from cell phones, video evidence that would prove that the prosecution has no case against Kyle Rittenhouse, and they go to hide it? Worse, there's talks about how they destroyed it. Well, they went off to hide the evidence. So, I mean, this is like with the FBI and Spygate. They knew the allegations were false. They decided to investigate it. They engaged in cover up and even go off to destroy evidence. When it came to the investigation into Hillary Clinton and her violation of the Espionage Act, did they go off and try to actually investigate that and hold her accountable? No. They helped engage in covering up the crimes of Hillary Clinton. And so because the left has their narrative when it comes to Kyle Rittenhouse, it seems like the police and the FBI believe that their job is to destroy any evidence that debunks the left-wing narrative and to knowingly prosecute an innocent person in a clear, no ifs, ands, or buts about it, self-defense case. Our justice system is massively corrupt, and the Democrats have corrupted it. Now, whether this corruption is because the FBI and the police want to attack our constitutional rights, especially our Second Amendment rights, or whether the corruption stems from the fact that the, at least at the local level, the investigators and the DA are also afraid of the Democrats, also afraid of the left-wing terrorists and how they will riot and burn down the city yet again and engage in more violence, that they will try to appease the mob by engaging in knowingly in baseless political prosecution and destroy evidence all over the place that exonerates a person in order to appease the mob. I mean, we saw this with the Chauvin trial, where an innocent officer was put in jail because the mob threatened the jury about what would happen if they found him not guilty. This is just beyond, you know, beyond anything that we have thought that we would have thought possible 20 years ago. The FBI massively corrupt, instead of being there to, you know, investigate crimes and protect the country, they believe themselves to be nothing more or little more than the political tools of the Democrat Party, that they serve the DNC to target the political opponents of the Democrats, down to now not even just targeting the political opponents, but targeting anybody who would support the Democrats. So they're destroying evidence. They're targeting parents who are upset about what school boards are forcing on their children, calling parents terrorists even. This is not long-term survivable. When the government has become this massively corrupt, when the justice system lacks any credibility, you know, what do you think is going to end up happening? How much longer do you think the people are going to act, you know, put up with this before they take a look at the Declaration of Independence and see that line about what the people have a right to do when a government becomes so tyrannical? Now, if you've been watching the trial, you understand that the prosecution realizes they have no case, that the evidence is so overwhelming that Kyle Rittenhouse acted in self-defense and was the one being attacked by the mob, that it appears they're not even really trying. It's almost like the prosecutor in this case is like, really? You are forcing me to try and prosecute this case? Really? And he understands that he is being completely humiliated. His own witnesses are debunking the narrative of the prosecution and the Democrats. It's really been amazing. They had one witness on the stand, and he's like, but you don't know what they're what he was thinking, right? When, you know, talking about the guy who got shot, you don't know what he was thinking. You don't know if he actually intended to harm Kyle Rittenhouse. And the guy is like, oh, I wish I would have remembered the names here. But the guy's like, well, other than him saying, fuck you, and then reaching for the gun, other than the fact that, you know, he had a loaded gun, you know, other than the fact that other witnesses have stated that the person that Kyle Rittenhouse shot had a loaded gun, had told them that if he ever got Kyle alone, that he was going to kill him. You know, so the prosecution's own witnesses are saying that the people that ended up getting shot threatened to kill Kyle, had loaded weapons, and attacked Kyle when they got him alone. The defense hasn't even presented anything, and right now, it seems like the prosecution is doing all of the work for the defense attorney, who must be just sitting there going, you know, by the time the prosecution is done, I could probably just rest the defense's case, because the defense's entire case is, yeah, Kyle Rittenhouse obviously acted in self-defense. He was the one being attacked. Unbelievable. So you got to be wondering what the prosecution must be thinking as they are being forced to prosecute a case in which they have no case. All the witnesses will all, you know, confirm that Kyle Rittenhouse shouldn't even be on trial. It is funny to see the narrative collapse. And of course, the left-wing media, now that people are able to watch the trial because they're interested and they're seeing the videos that are available, the witness testimony, and now they're having to come out, you know, especially for legal protection, to admit that they were wrong. you know, that their narratives about this, that, and the other thing regarding the whole situation was wrong. That basically everything they told their audience when the events happened and for the months leading up to the trial was complete BS. And you even see that on the Young Turks with Anna Kasparian, you know, going off going, well, I didn't see this video. I didn't see that. And it's like, okay. So the Young Turks are either admitting that they are just complete frauds that, you know, just blatantly lie to their audience, which, by the way, they do, or they talk out of their ass and never do any research on any of the things that they talk about. And therefore, you can't trust anything that they say, which, by the way, you can't. But they're now having to try and backtrack and come up with excuses for why everything they told their audience about the situation was completely and totally wrong. It is kind of funny to see. And so I would suggest that once Kyle Rittenhouse is exonerated, you know, found not guilty, that the thing that he does is that he goes off and hires the same lawyer that Nick Sandman hired and to sue CNN, NBC, MSNBC, the Young Turks, all of them, sue them because of their libelous, slanderous reporting resulted in him getting prosecuted despite all the evidence showing that there was no prosecution to be had, you know, that they lied in order to get and put pressure to have him prosecuted. He's going to end up, I think, with millions upon millions of dollars, just like Nick Sandman. And if all of that isn't bad enough, you know, Spygate and the knowingly false prosecution of Kyle Rittenhouse, the FBI and the DOJ, as always under a Democrat, continue to show just how massively corrupt they are. This time, going back to the Obama-era policy of targeting journalists. Yes, targeting journalists that they don't like, spying on them, and even going off and conducting raids now. So maybe you might have heard of this, but FBI searches the homes of Project Veritas-linked people. Now, as the story goes, and this is reported by the Epoch Times, in 2020, Project Veritas was contacted by individuals who claimed to have obtained a copy of a diary belonging to Ashley Biden, Joe Biden's youngest daughter. O'Keefe said in the video, tipsters alleged that the diary was found abandoned in a room after she left, and the diary contained explosive allegations against then-candidate Joe Biden. Project Veritas lawyers, he continued, were in contact with the Department of Justice before the searches were carried out. Their lawyers told federal agents that they had conveyed unsalable facts that demonstrated Project Veritas' lack of involvement in criminal activity and or criminal intent. Like any reporter, we regularly deal with the receipt of source information and take steps to verify its authenticity, legality, and newsworthiness. Our efforts were the stuff of responsible, ethical journalism, and we are in no doubt that Project Veritas acted properly at each and every step, O'Keefe added. O'Keefe said, Project Veritas could not determine the authenticity of the diary and tried to return it to one of Ashley Biden's attorneys, but the lawyer refused to authenticate it. The organization instead gave it to law enforcement to ensure it could be returned to its rightful owner and never published it. Now, Ms. Biden's father's Department of Justice, specifically the United States Attorney's Office for the Southern District of New York, appears to be investigating the situation, claiming the diary was stolen. So let's think about this situation for a moment. I remember when President Trump's tax returns were illegally leaked to the media, and there was no consequences for anybody in the media who ran with the story publishing the details of President Trump's tax returns. There was no raid by the FBI, no searches, no criminal prosecutions whatsoever. When the media gets and obtains information illegally about Republicans, they're free to do whatever they want with it under the protection of the First Amendment, allowing them to go with it no matter how illegally obtained that they got the information. No consequences whatsoever. But in this situation, James O'Keefe and Project Veritas, who are journalists protected by the First Amendment, received the diary of Joe Biden's youngest daughter. And it had, in their terms, explosive allegations. Could it be that his daughter was in and writing about how her father was going to engage in election fraud or the illegal activities of the family or so on and whatnot? Maybe, maybe not. But Project Veritas could not authenticate the diary. And it sounded, and I guess it sounded or looked too good to be true, like someone was maybe trying to troll them, give them false information, and see if they would run with it in order to try and discredit Project Veritas. But Project Veritas could not authenticate it. They never published anything about it. They tried to return it. Now, of course, I understand what, you know, the Biden's attorney are probably thinking. If they accepted it, they would be authenticating that it's the real diary of Miss Biden, and afraid that Project Veritas may have made photocopies of some of the most explosive details in there that could lead to a criminal prosecution of Joe Biden or of Hunter Biden or of other members of the Biden family. Who knows? So they refused to accept it. Then Project Veritas sent it to the Justice Department, sent it over to law enforcement saying, hey, we received something illegally. We are handing it over to law enforcement so that you can return it to its proper owner. So it's not exactly like they are can be charged with receiving stolen goods, because law enforcement, before they ever knew Project Veritas had possession of the diary, Project Veritas had already turned it over to them. So it makes you wonder, what is this raid about? What is this raid on Project Veritas for? Because they already contacted authorities. They first tried to return it to the lawyers for Miss Biden, trying to give her back her diary. Then they gave it to law enforcement so that they could return it to the proper owner. And how are they rewarded for responsible journalism? How are they rewarded for returning stolen property? If it was stolen, it may have just been abandoned, you know, whatever. That's not the point. But upon receiving it, they returned it and never ran any stories about what was written in it because they could not authenticate it. Now, you don't see that level of responsibility with the likes of MSNBC, NBC, CNN, ABC, CBS, or any of the other alphabet networks. When they receive stolen information, when they receive information that was obtained illegally, if it's damaging to Republicans, they run with it. And then they claim that they are protected under the First Amendment. But a conservative outlet receives information, is not able to determine that the information was obtained legally, could not authenticate it, tries to return it. And then when the lawyers wouldn't accept it, return it, hand it over to law enforcement for law enforcement to investigate. And how are they treated? They're treated like criminals with search warrants and raids on them. Which goes off to show here that the chances are this was authentically Miss Biden's diary. Because after all, if they had gone through and they looked at the contents and they went to Miss Biden and go, is this yours? And she said no. Well, then what happened is that Project Veritas would have been deemed to have received misinformation, did nothing with it, and therefore there's no problem. But if after handing it over to law enforcement, Miss Biden authenticated it as genuinely her diary, and if it exposes crimes of the Biden family, well, now Biden has a problem. What if Project Veritas made photocopies of some of the pages within that diary that exposed the crimes and illegal activities, whether that's related to elections or related to the family business of the Biden family? Well, if this was to ever get out, that could be very damaging. So now they start raiding the homes and offices of these journalists, searching for any copy of the diary's pages in order to bury evidence, destroy evidence before it could ever be published. So I would say that what we see here with the raid is that the diary was authentic, and I do hope that Project Veritas did keep copies of it and then runs those copies, exposes what was in there, and then if they try to prosecute Project Veritas, he'll claim the same First Amendment and protection of the rest of the media and point out all the other media outlets that have received information that was illegally obtained by their source and nothing ever happened, right? Maybe. I mean, I don't know all of the laws that are in play here, but the fact that they are now targeting a conservative journalist outlet for returning information because they're afraid that they may have made copies before returning. Wow. This is reminiscent of the Obama administration, who was spying on journalists and was, I don't know, you wouldn't say phone tap, but was even monitoring and intercepting communications of journalists. There is so much corruption that is going on and always happens whenever the Democrats are in charge. We cannot keep just looking at these stories and going, what are you going to do? This is normal under a Democrat administration. No, we can't allow this to be normalized or just seen as another, day in the country. And, I'm tired of whenever Republicans get elected saying, well, for the good of the country, we must move on. Basically saying that they are not going to do anything about any of the crimes or illegal conduct committed under the Democrat Party or a Democrat administration. They always go, let's move along. Let's just act like it didn't happen. We'll let them get away with this one. And then, of course, the next time the Democrats are in charge, they go even further because there's never any consequences. We need to make sure that any Republican that gets into office, especially the next Republican president, goes through and investigates all of these crimes and all of these corruptions, the complete abuse of power, the violations of the Constitution, and prosecutes to the fullest extent of the law all the crimes that the Democrats have committed. I'm tired of the two-tiered justice system. I am tired of the FBI and the Department of Justice acting not as agents of the government to enforce laws, but as agents of the DNC, whose purpose is to target political opponents, to violate our rights, and to cover up for the crimes of the Democrat. I am tired of this, and it needs to stop. And we, the people, need to start taking more forceful action against all of this corruption. Because the Republicans, while they speak a tough game on the campaign trail, once they get into office, they at most, maybe half-ass an investigation. And when the investigation comes up with, with the destruction of evidence, we can't conclusively prove, so I guess we're just going to let it go. Like Hillary Clinton, going through and bleach bidding all of her electronic devices, destroying them with hammers, going off complete destruction of all evidence, and she just gets away with it. I'm just frustrated. I'm tired of it. It happens repeatedly, and we need to say enough is enough. Okay, so moving along here. You remember in New Jersey about how that truck driver spending $150 beat the most powerful Democrat or second most powerful Democrat in the state of New Jersey who had millions of dollars on his campaign? Well, there's more information that is coming out because the Democrat, New Jersey's Senate President Steve Sweeney, is refusing to concede the election. Yes, he's refusing to concede. So you remember there was a lot of pressure on President Trump to concede after the fraudulent election and, trying to say by not conceding, he is damaging democracy. And of course, the Democrats were saying at the time that if Joe Biden lost, he shouldn't concede no matter what. So anyways, the New Jersey Democrat is refusing to concede, even though the election had been called. Of course, if you go by the standards of the Democrats, the election was called by the media, and therefore the election is over, and any attempts to challenge the result, it would be a direct assault on democracy. But of course, the left has no standard. It's all double standard, so, the rules change to whatever benefits the Democrats. But what I find most interesting about this is the reason he won't concede. Now, he's stating that he won't concede until every last vote is counted, until every last ballot is counted, because every vote should count, Now, I don't disagree with that particular point. I just wish that when the situation is reversed and it's a Republican saying, hey, I want to wait until every last vote is counted before I determine whether or not I would concede, if the Republicans or if the Democrats would treat that the same as when a Democrat does that. I mean, that would be nice, you know, if they got rid of the double standard. But as I take a look at this, part of the whole every vote should be counted comes after claiming that 12,000 ballots were found. Yes, that's right. 12,000 ballots that, you know, that disappeared at some point or whatever, mysteriously appears out of nowhere. Oh, yes. So he lost. He lost by thousands of votes. And all of a sudden, as he's refusing to concede, surprise, surprise, it's a miracle. 12,000 ballots appear out of nowhere that need to be counted now. You know, now what is up with this? All of these ballots, and you see this time and time again in races where Democrats are losing. We saw this during the 2020 election when it came to President Trump. President Trump would be up by a lot, and then all of a sudden, you know, the election would be shut down. And when they reopened the counting, suddenly tens of thousands of ballots were mysteriously found, come out of thin air, or just poof, like some deity just snapped it into existence. And now we are seeing that again, where the election was called, the Democrat was, you know, had lost, and then suddenly out of nowhere, thousands of more ballots are just mysteriously found. So here's the two sides of this, and both sides are pretty bad. The one side is that the elections are so horribly run that tens of thousands of ballots, or, you know, at least thousands upon thousands, in this case it's 12,000, but thousands upon thousands of ballots are mishandled every election cycle and disappear. Thousands of people cast their votes and those votes are never counted because they get misplaced. The elections are that incompetently run. And therefore, when we take a look at the election results, we have to wonder the legitimacy of those results. Is that how the people actually voted? Or is it because of incompetence that all those, that so many ballots just disappeared and those disappearing ballots changed the outcome of the election? And of course, you can bet every single time that when ballots disappear, vanish without a trace, there are ballots that are cast for the Republican. You know, you'll never see a ballot cast for Democrats suddenly disappear. Now, the other side, which is even more horrible, I mean, we got the complete incompetence and somehow ballots for Republicans disappear. You know, and ballots disappear all in just in general because of incompetence. As bad as that is, the other side is they saw how badly the Democrat lost, figured out how many ballots they needed to generate in order to change the election. Now, they can't just go, hey, we mysteriously found 12,000 ballots, and wouldn't you know it, they're all for the Democrat. No, no, no. They had to take a look at, okay, this is how far he's behind. This is kind of the ratio of voting for Republican versus Democrat. Okay, so how many ballots do we need to come up with whereby, if, you know, to make it reasonable, some of those ballots could still go for the Republican, but enough of the ballots are for the Democrats to overtake it. You know, the manufacturing of ballots and then suddenly finding new ballots previously lost. Now, the fact that we can count on this in every election, where the Democrat loses, that suddenly ballots are found, lost ballots are suddenly found, that could change the outcome of the election in the favor of the Democrats. The fact that we can count on this from coast to coast, wherever the Democrats are in charge, wherever the Democrats have control of the legislative and executive branch for that state, the fact that we can count on this is just a little too much of a coincidence, you know, it to be believable. We know what's happening, because it happens all the time. The Democrats are engaged in fraud. But of course, if anybody ever tried to investigate the legitimacy of these ballots that are suddenly found, investigating it is an attack on democracy. the people who run the elections will just ignore any court order for any investigation. And of course, we'll never get to the bottom of it. Meanwhile, the Department of Justice has also filed a lawsuit against Texas over the new election law known as SB1. They're trying to claim that it violates civil rights protection. Why? Because they demand that people show their ID to vote. Now, the Justice Department is going, our democracy depends on the right of eligible voters to cast ballots and to have the ballots counted. Now, what's interesting is that key words there, eligible voter. Well, in order to determine whether or not they're eligible voters, don't you need to confirm the identity of the person casting the ballot? I mean, that would make sense to me going, hey, we want to make sure every eligible voter votes, but that every ineligible voter doesn't. Nobody, you know, can just travel here from overseas, cast a ballot in our election, and then return home. So that means we need to be able to identify and confirm the identity of the person casting the ballot. How is this controversial? How is this controversial in any way, shape, or form? It says you have to be a citizen to vote. Okay, so maybe you need to show some ID to show that you are who you say you are. Because we have seen time and time again people going on and, you know, assuming the identity for the election of someone who's on the voter rolls but hasn't voted in a while, maybe because they're dead, maybe because they moved, or maybe because they are disinterested. They only voted that one time because they really like that one candidate. So we want to make sure that we can confirm the identity. And by the way, the rule is equally applied to everybody. It's not based off of people of this skin color have to show ID, but people of this skin color doesn't. No, it's like everybody has to show ID. And it's interesting because if you show up in person, you got to be able to confirm your identity. But if you vote by mail, no one checks whether or not you are who you say you are. And so people can be going around checking mailboxes for ballots and then going around taking the ballots, filling them out and returning them in the name of another person. So this is a very reasonable integrity law to say, hey, you must show your ID, you know, confirm your identity before you can cast a ballot. But of course, the Democrats don't like that because they are dependent upon election fraud and foreign money in order to obtain political power because the people themselves won't vote for the Democrats. And meanwhile, DeSantis is moving to stop the Biden administration from flying illegal aliens into Florida, especially after one of them murdered a Florida citizen. That's right. So as you know, Biden continues to import illegal immigrants across the border, and he's flying them around to Republican areas. And of course, a lot of them are infected with COVID-19. So he brings them across the border with his open border policy, flies them to Republican areas, and then when COVID cases go up as a result, Biden then tries to grandstand scene going, see, they won't do what I want them to do, and COVID cases are rising, despite the fact that COVID cases tend to be very low. And you would start seeing that the COVID cases are basically the illegal immigrants that Joe Biden is dropping off in the state. But there's also the fact that Joe Biden and the Democrats are trying to pass amnesty. And so they're trying to import as many people across the border as possible, illegally in violation of the law, dump them off in Republican areas, and then they hope to pass amnesty in order to make them eligible voters to try and flip the state red. You know, you can't get the people to vote for you, replace the voters. Well, now the DeSantis has had enough of this. And so he's going off and he's trying to make moves to try and block the federal government from being able to drop off illegal immigrants, people in the country illegally, to prevent the Biden administration from dumping them in Florida. I hope he wins. And then, of course, with the tyranny of the Democrats, Biden threatens $10,000 fine and jail time for anybody lying about their vaccine status. So he's employing his vaccine mandate, and he's trying to ram it down unconstitutionally on the American people. And now he's trying to go off and say that, hey, if people try to lie about their vaccination status, provide falsified vaccine passports and all of that, oh, then such a person should face a $10,000 fine in jail for lying about their vaccination status. Except then you got to start wondering here. Well, he's imposing it on the business. So if you were to submit your vaccine passport, are you submitting it to the company? In which case, there is no crime in lying to your boss. You may be fired, but if you're caught, but there is no crime there. Or are you submitting it directly to the federal government? If you are submitting it to the federal government, well, there's a lot of constitutional violations that are going on with the government demanding to know your healthcare information, your vaccination status, and a whole bunch of other stuff, right? Now, luckily, right now, this is not going well for the Biden administration, as the Court of Appeals have already stepped in and, well, implemented an order that bars the administration from being able to implement it until they hear the court cases. So the Democrats, the Biden administration, has until today to try and respond to the stay or the injunction on their vaccine mandate. And then after they respond, they will be going forward to the court. Now, as much as we go on and we talk about the courts and how corrupt a lot of the courts are getting, I do have no doubt. I have no doubt that this will end up at the Supreme Court. And I'm sure that the Supreme Court will knock this down. You know, that the five judges, even though, you know, they haven't been the best on certain other issues, but when it comes down to it, I'm sure that the five justices that are by and large mostly conservative will strike down this vaccine mandate and boom, it's gone before it ever gets implemented. And of course, what Biden will do is what he did with the eviction moratorium is go, well, you know, I tried. The court struck it down. There's nothing I can do. And so now he can move along. He can always try and claim that he did everything possible. And, you know, the courts blocked him. And so now anything that goes on, no matter what, it's not his fault because, you know, he could have stopped it if only the courts would have gone along with it. That will be the line, you know, which is a pretty good cover for the fact that nothing he would have done would have had any effect, especially when the vaccines, when you take a look at it, lose almost all of their effectiveness. I mean, they're not really vaccines, but they lose all of their effectiveness in 6 months. So there would be constant mandates on booster shots, shot after shot after shot. It would be never ending because COVID is never going to end. It's like cold and flu. It's always going to be around forever, permanently. There's no putting the genie back in its bottle. But to further drive on the unconstitutionality of this is now saying that most truck drivers will be exempt from the vaccine mandate. So this goes on, and I would say it violates the Equal Protection Clause of the Constitution because now they're making so many exceptions that it's being unequally applied that as a result, it violates the Equal Protection Clause of the Constitution along with so many other things. Now, two more things here real quick. So Representative Jim Banks was locked out of his Twitter account after posting the indisputable fact that the so-called first, Rachel Levine being named the first female four-star officer is false because he's a man. And because he posted the indisputable fact that Rachel Levine, or whatever his real name is in fact a man, Twitter locked him out of his account. They locked me on my account as well, forcing Jim Banks to have to delete it in order to be able to communicate through Twitter to his constituents. Now, think about this. Twitter has now demanded that it has the authority to censor government officials, to censor members of the House and the Senate. And of course, this comes after they had already created for themselves the right to censor, block, and deplatform a sitting president of the United States just for posting in this particular situation that a man is a man. And they say it violated Twitter's rules. But if you take a look at Twitter and you take a look at all the murderous dictators, terrorist groups, and organizations that are all allowed to be on Twitter, I mean, it's really amazing. So if you post a man as a man, hey, that's a problem. You're going to be blocked and you have to delete that if you want access back to your account. If you advocate for murder and genocide and you happen to be in a third world country, that's perfectly fine with Twitter. So as Twitter wants to go off and Facebook and so forth want to go off and further start censoring, blocking, and deplatforming government officials, elected members of the House and the Senate? What do you think is going to happen after the 2022 midterms? The Republicans, being directly censored and potentially deplatformed themselves, well, they're going to have a say about that. You know, they get supermajorities in the House and the Senate. Guess what's going to happen to your legal protection, Twitter? What do you think is going to happen to Section 230 of the Communication Decency Act? You're gonna face some harsh times. You may even see your your claiming to be a platform completely destroyed. The Republicans, along with impeachment as their top priority, will be to end online censorship. Okay, now one last story here as a sign for the culture. So a high school principal is having to apologize for lack of sportsmanship. So when you hear this and you hear the story, you're probably initially looking at the headline going, whoa, what did the team do? Did they get too cocky? Did they over-celebrate? Did they do something obscene? No. The lack of sportsmanship is because they won and won by a lot. So this is a horrible sign for the time. A Los Angeles high school is apologizing after facing criticism that its football team didn't simply defeat an opponent, but rather trounced the opposing squad by a score of 106-0. Yes, they have to apologize because they didn't just win, they won big, and so much that it humiliated the other team. They're even opening up an investigation because the final score was unacceptable. So they're having to open up an investigation about how the game was allowed to continue to rack up such a score. You know, and all that. So the team that absolutely sucked is whining and complaining that they didn't score a single point. And the school that won massively is having to apologize for letting their team continue to score up points and not letting the other team score. In sports, having to apologize for winning in a sports competition because they don't like how much you won by. This is the whole everyone gets a trophy. You know, you're not allowed to hurt anybody's feelings, so you can't win by much. Bunch of crybaby sissies. It's because of things like this and, you know, school administrators bowing to this crap and apologizing for their team winning that is so destructive to the culture. You know, wussifying the country, which is why no one is standing up to all of the corruptions, illegal, and unconstitutional behaviors of the Democrat Party. All right, so that's it for this particular episode. I'd like to thank you so much for listening in. Leave me a rating and review and share this around everywhere that free speech is allowed. Thank you so much, and I will be back again soon.